Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Jayatma pasu vritya grihapta bhagam.
Jayatma pasu vritya grihapta bhagam.
Pushnati apriya sakirsaya vatanvan.
Pushnati apriya sakirsaya vatanvan.
Svante sakritsam abarudadanasa deha.
Svante sakritsam abarudadanasa deha.
Srisvasya vijan lavasiddhati vriksadharma.
Srisvasya vijan lavasiddhati vriksadharma.
Jayatma jarta pasu vritya grihap. Bhagan. Pushnati yat priya sakirsaya vatanvan.
Pushnati yat priya sakirsaya vatanvan.
Svante sakrishram avarudadana sadeha.
Svante sakrishram avarudadana sadeha.
Srisvasya vijam avasiddhati vriksadharma.
Srisvasya vijam avasiddhati vriksadharma.
Now, before we begin speaking about this verse, you're leaving. Why?
Jaya.
Jaya.
But before we read this verse, I would like to discuss the frame of reference that this verse is spoken in. Who remembers something from just one sentence from the last few classes? The basic context is that Dattatreya Muni has achieved a fully dependent upon the Supreme Lord's state of consciousness, and Maharaj Yadu asked him how he learned this, and he said, I've learned this by observing and learning from so many gurus who one would normally not think of as gurus, such as, who can say one?
Wasp.
Wasp.
Spider.
Spider. Pingo, that's later, yes? Okay, you've been reading ahead, how wonderful.
Three.
Huh?
Three.
Tree, fire, sky.
Clouds.
Clouds,
sky.
Oh, there are gurus everywhere. Pigeon. Pigeon? What do you learn from a pigeon?
To get attached to its family life.
To get attached from bogus guru. And the one we're speaking about now, that he's named as the guru, is the body, the material body. What can we learn from a material body? So that's what this verse is about. And it's basically very negative things, although everyone tends to have a conception of their body in a very dreamlike way, wanting it to be the source of... We look at our body and want it to be the source of pleasure, enjoyment. But this Dattatreya is saying just the opposite of what we can actually learn from our body. It is the source of misery, and that our true existence, our true happiness, exists somewhere else. So this verse and this realm appears to be like a lot of bad news. But actually, within the bad news is the most wonderful news. And that wonderful news is that our real life, our real happiness, it does exist. It does exist, but it doesn't exist where we usually try to find it. So here's the verse. Jaya.
Jaya.
Oh, no, should we read the translation first? How do we do it? I forgot already.
Word translation and...
And then the word by word. Which we do first? Word by word. Okay, we're going very well. Jaya.
Jaya.
White.
Atmaja.
Atmaja. What does Atmaja mean? Huh?
Atma means soul.
Atmaja means born. Ja means born from the Atma. So the Atma, the self, has many different meanings depending upon the usage and our level of consciousness. Usually we think the Atma or the self as the body. And of course, ultimately, the Atma is the soul, the eternal, who I am eternally. Now, the Atma is me as the body, but only temporarily. So what is born of this temporary body, it is children. So Atmaja in this context means children. Repeat, children.
Children.
Not you, them. Repeat, children.
Children.
Very good. Atmaja means children. Artha, money. Pashu, domestic animals. Vritya, servants. Griha, home. Apta, relatives and friends. So when the Bhagavatam is giving this kind of a list, we can just imagine what's going to come next. Wife, children, money, domestic animals, servants, home, relatives and friends. Vargan,
all these categories.
So grouping these, all these concepts and things that we deal with all the time and are very intimately connected with, they're all in one category. And what is that category going to be? Don't answer yet. Just listen. We shall hear what the Bhagavatam is saying here. Pushnati,
Pushnati
nourishes.
Yat.
The body. Priya Chakirshaya, with the desire to please. Vitanvan,
expanding.
Svaanta, at the time of death. Sakritcham,
with great struggle.
Avarudha,
accumulated.
Dana,
wealth.
Saha,
this.
Deha,
body.
Srishtva,
having been created. Asra,
of the living entity.
Bijam,
the seed.
Avashiddhati,
falls down and dies.
Vritsha,
the tree. So we see what's going to be described is that the tree of this body, along with all, sometimes I know someone who says, who doesn't get along with the extended family very well. And she says, you say, are these your in-laws? I say, no, these are outlaws. So the whole lot, the whole tree with all its fruits and many nuts sinks down, falls down. The tree of a material existence based on the body will one day fall down and die. So here is the translation. I'll read it one time and then we'll repeat it. A man attached to the body accumulates money with great struggle. Is that true, old gentleman? Is it a great struggle to accumulate money?
Right.
What is the greatest part of the struggle?
Loss.
Yes, that's just what I was thinking. A boss. Because it's very unnatural. It ruins the spirit of a man, actually, to have a boss. Unless, of course, the boss is very magnanimous. But it ruins the spirit of a man to have a boss. Because when you have a boss, naturally you want to please them. It's just completely natural. At least on the surface. You have to want to please them. And that compromises the spirit of a man, especially, or also a woman too. So a man attached to the body accumulates money with great struggle, and every day, whether you feel like it or not, you have to go to the job and you have to subserviate it. You have to smile at all these people you don't want to smile at. So many of them. And they ask you such... Anyway. He accumulates money with great struggle. For what purpose? To expand and protect the position of his wife, children, property, domestic animals, servants, home, relatives, friends, and so on. Why does he do this? If it's such a great struggle, why does he do it? The next sentence describes. Is this the kindness of his heart that he takes care of? He struggles so hard to maintain so many others? And the answer that the Bhagavatam gives right here is he does all this for the gratification of his own body. As a tree before dying produces the seed of a future tree, the dying body manifests the seed of one's next material body in the form of one's accumulated karma, thus assuring the continuation of material existence. After one has accumulated in one's consciousness the seeds of one's future births in the form of material desires, adhisthayam manasthayam visaya upasevate, in the form of material desires, then the body, material body, sinks down and dies. So this type of negative preaching and negative words is especially the mode of preaching of whom? It's not actually the mode of preaching of bhakti. Not actually that. It's actually the level of preaching of the jnanis, because the entire position, the entire mood of the jnanis is to renounce, to give up matter, to not become entangled in matter. So therefore it is given such a negative connotation, so we don't become entangled in it. Because the jnanis, whose goal is to lose one's material entanglement in one's false sense of self, and then to merge into Brahman, which is qualityless. So therefore the whole experience is of renunciation. One has to give up everything. One has to go to the forest. Through the use of one's jnana, based on one's intelligence, the jnani tries to understand that he is what he is not, the process of neti, 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 neti. I'm not this body. I'm not my glasses. I'm not my eyes. I'm not the coat. I'm not the dhoti. I'm not the flower petal. I'm not my mind. I'm not even my intelligence. I'm not even the false sense of self that I have. I am not this, I am not this, I am not this. I am spiritual, I am eternal. I am eternal. Would have nothing to do with the material world. So it's very, very, very negative. Well, on the other hand, the actual preaching and the actual mood of bhaktis or devotees is nirbandha krishna sambandhe yukta varagya uchite. Not that this world and even the body is a terrible thing, but rather it is all Krishna's property. So the devotee doesn't try to exploit the material body and situation, as does the materialist, the karmi, nor does he try to negate it like the jnani, but rather he sees it in relationship to Krishna. So then the next question is asked, and Dattatreya Muni, who's speaking like this, he's actually acting from the position of a jnani, actually. So then the question is, this book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's called the Paramahansa Samhita. Okay? And this is for the topmost devotees, Namat Saranam Satam, those who are completely free from envy. For developing love for Krishna. So why is jnani type of preaching included for the devotees? And the answer is because devotees also have a tendency to become attached to matter because we're conditioned souls or we're aspiring to be devotees. It's not actually required, this kind of preaching isn't actually required for the actual devotees, those who have taken shelter of the internal energy, but is required for we who are aspiring devotees, who are in the material realm, wishing to transfer our attachment to the spiritual realm. So this kind of preaching is required to shake us, so that we remember that even if we decide we like this material world and keep our subtle ways of enjoying it, we cannot stay here. We cannot stay here. And if we accumulate material desires, these desires are the seed for our next birth. Material desires. And our spiritual desires will cause the spiritual nature of our next birth. And if we are intensely greedy for the spiritual realm and don't care for the material realm, and all our material desires have been burnt to ashes by our intense fire of our spiritual desires, then tattva deham puna janma naiti. No more material births. Just go to Krishna. Vitaraga maya krodhava, Krishna says. Puta mad bhavam agata. But one has to be free from attachment, fear, and anger. From the jnani platform, there is extreme amount of fear, and that's the cause of their renunciation. Extreme amount of fear of material entanglement, which is healthy on one level, but fear does not generate love for Krishna. It is helpful to push us from our material attachments. So please repeat this verse again. A man attached to the body accumulates money with great struggle. We should get one of these that works on solar energy. I mean, so it works by the power of soul. Soul, so it doesn't ever diminish or die. I have a suggestion, why not just change it at the beginning of the class, before the class begins, whoever is in charge of this, because it always goes out in the middle of class. Who's in charge of Krishna's in charge. Sava Karana Karanam. That's why it doesn't get done. Now I understand. So he accumulates money with great struggle to expand and protect the position of his wife, children, property, domestic animals, servants, homes, relatives, friends, and so on. He does all this for the gratification of his own body. As a tree before dying, produces the seed of a future tree, the dying body,
manifests
the seed, of one's next material body, in the form of one's accumulated karma. Thus assuring the continuation of material existence, the material body sinks
down.
And dies. Here is the purple, the VBT purple. It's, the first paragraph is quite funny in a sense. One might argue, amongst all the gurus mentioned thus far, so many gurus have been mentioned, and what was the last one that's been mentioned? We should learn from our guru, the body. Amongst all the gurus mentioned thus far, the material body is certainly the best. The best what? Guru. Since it awards the detachment and fine intelligence that enables one to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, since our body is the best guru, we should serve the body. Although it is temporary, we should serve it because it is the best guru, although it is temporary, with attachment, great attachment. Or risk the offense of ungratefulness. Good argument, yes? Funny argument, anyway. How can detachment from the body be recommended when the body is endowed with so many wonderful qualities? This great teacher. So why should we become detached from it? Then we are guilty of being ungrateful. That's the funny argument. What do you think of this argument? Very good argument, yes? We should serve our body. We should obey every desire our body has and gives us. How would we defeat this argument? The answer is given in this verse. The body does not award detachment and knowledge in the matter of some benevolent, kind-hearted teacher. Rather, it causes so much pain and misery that any common sense person cannot help being convinced of the uselessness of material life. But unfortunately, generally, one doesn't realize the uselessness of material life until the very near the end of one's life. Because in the mode of passion, we are filled with so many desires for enjoyment, so many desires, we don't have time or the detachment or the ability to think about the situation, our situation or the situation of every embodied soul within this world. How difficult it is. I mean, sometimes, I remember when that, a few years ago, there was a giant tsunami that hit, the epicenter was somewhere in Indonesia, even made all its way to Chennai, and it caused such great destruction. And there were many people who were theists, religious persons, became atheists because of that. Because in that one tsunami, 250,000 people died. So they thought, how could God do this? So no benevolent, kind-hearted God could do this, so therefore there's no God. Who'd want to worship a God who does this, who causes so much suffering? But the problem is even greater than that, actually. Because although 250,000 people died within perhaps a half hour of that, the problem is still greater, because every single person who is alive at this moment will die. So if one wants to take the problem to its extreme, we should see how great it is that this world is a graveyard in process. It's a Holocaust, practically speaking. So we're marching towards that. And I once heard Prabhupada tell the story of how goats in the slaughterhouse, you know, there's one goat called the Judas goat, who betrays the other goats. And he walks through, they put the goats in the yard, and he's trained with a bell around his neck to walk through the hole, the little doorway, and all the other goats follow him. And they take that goat, feed him for his good work, and they save him. And then one by one, the goats line up. It's not nice to even describe these kind of things. But they have their heads chopped off. And the one next to it, they'll be eating grass. The one next in line will be eating grass. And thinking how nice and soft and tender this grass is. And he's next in line. So welcome to the material world. We can say how, oh, the foolish goats, the foolish goats, the foolish goats. Are you a foolish goat? And we all know what the goats respond, because we mentioned this yesterday. Are you a foolish goat? Nah. Just a different use of the same joke. But it's actually not a joke. It's frightening and it's sad. And we can look at the foolish goats there, but then when we see the foolish goat within, it's very frightening, because of the driving forces of my material desires and the modes of passion and ignorance. I am the most foolish goat. Why? I'm Sunya Bishakainu, Janiya Sunya Bishakainu, because I know better. I know what's going to happen. And still I act in this way. So the reality is, although the advertisements for the material world read and tell us, and the basic preaching of the material world is that your body is the source of your pleasure. And the first thing that Krishna tells Arjuna is no. So you're not your body. And the cause of our misery is our material body. And the cause of our pleasure is something different. The cause of our pleasure is awakening our relationship with Krishna and being with Krishna in the spiritual world. Now this, of course, raises many interesting questions. So get to that Krishna willing later. So the answer to the question, the funny type of argument that the body is the guru and it's teaching us, so therefore we should serve it very, very carefully and make our mind one with it. Koriya aikya, we should make our mind one with our body. But the answer is no. The body teaches us in a negative way. It teaches us by causing us suffering and misery, if not today, but tomorrow. So it is bad news in the sense that I don't want to know these things. I don't like to hear these things. It's not pleasurable to hear these things. But it's good news in the sense of we're walking off a roof on the 50th floor of a building. We're walking off thinking that we're going to fly. And we jump off the roof and think how nice it is to go up. I'm flying. But just 3 seconds later, the good news is over that I've jumped up and I'm flying. So if someone tells us, excuse me, if you jump off this roof right now, you may have 2 seconds of going upwards, but the ultimate result is going to be horrible. Don't do this. Don't do this. Don't be such a fool. We might not like to hear it because we have a plan to fly into the sunset as we jump up, but it's just not possible. It's not possible. It's not possible. It's actually not possible to enjoy in this world. That's the point. And those who appear to us as to be enjoying, they have successfully bluffed us only, and that's it. Because no one, because that's the meaning of being, that's the happiness of a materialistic person, it's getting people envious of them and making people believe that I'm enjoying when you're not. Be envious of me, because I have it all. I have my long stretch limo with its blackened windows and no one can see how wonderful I am inside, which makes us want to see how wonderful you are inside. But actually, no one is free from suffering. And the people who have the most wealth and everything. If you're a famous movie star, especially famous movie star, I was going to say, especially if you're a Mataji, but most of them aren't really Matajis. And I was going to say, even especially if you're a lady, but most of them aren't ladies. Especially if you're a woman, yes. If you're a movie star, you can't even walk alone. You have to have bodyguards with you. So that means, why do you carry a bodyguard? Why do you walk with a bodyguard? Because you have no anxiety? Everyone wants to exploit you, or beat you, or kill you, or carry you away, or kidnap you, or something. That's why one has a bodyguard with them. So is it possible to be that they are the ones who are happy, and we make them our heroes? The people who appear to be materially successful, but no one is materially successful. Just like no one jumps up and continues flying upward in the sky from the top of the building. No, everyone is guaranteed a crash landing. We're laughing longer than someone else who does who crashes and lands. But it's actually very, very sobering, because this is me that it's going to happen to. And I'm very attached to my body and my situation. I'm very attached to it. So it's actually very heavy, and it's not pleasant, but it is essential. It is essential that we understand that the body is the cause of suffering, not the cause of our pleasure. And that we shouldn't spend our time and energy seeking pleasure in that way. Rather, we should become more introspective, more philosophical, and ultimately, and try to understand what the purpose of life is. At least that. There's one short more paragraph in the purport. Let me read that. And then we'll begin Bhagavatam class. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, deha indicates both the gross body and the subtle mental body. Those who do not clearly understand the difference between the body and soul falsely think that body and soul are identical. and that one can find perfect happiness in bodily sense gratification. But those who foolishly accept the temporary body as all-important cannot be compared with self-realized souls who intelligently understand the superiority of the eternal soul. Om Agamitinam Vasan, Janagina Sanabara, Chatsu Samilatan Janat, Sasmai, Sri Yulayama. Sri Chaitanya Manavisam, Sapitam Yamanitale, Sayam Yupadam Tipati Satanam. Vahinsa Kopati Vyasta, Kripitam Yamanita, Patitanam Kavanam Yam, Vaishnam Yamanam. Interesting that, of course, and obvious in another sense, that the 11th canto, where this type of heavy preaching goes on, it's obvious that it follows the 10th canto. But this is what, these are the realizations reminding us, these are the realizations that have to be very strongly in place if one wants to achieve the smiling face of Krishna, which is described in the 10th canto. If one actually wants to taste the positive, one has to remove the negative attachments, negative meaning counterproductive, that don't give us what we want. So that raises a dilemma, a problem. I've heard this, we've previously gone over the 10th canto, and we've heard about eternal spiritual life, the life of the soul, the Chaitanya Charita, the activities of the soul in the realm of eternity. I've read this, I've heard this, I've heard how the residents of Vrindavan love Krishna so completely. I've heard that Krishna is the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead, that He is Bhagavan, that He possesses, He is the one who possesses all fortune, Bhaga. He is Sat Aishwarya Purna. He has all fame, all knowledge. He is all-attractive, He's beautiful. He's strong, unlimitedly strong, unlimitedly beautiful. Detached from everything. He's all attractive. And then I've heard that He has a relationship, and I have a relationship with Him. Mama eva angsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanat, an eternal sanatana relationship with Krishna. I've heard this, and in the deepest part of me, I long for this. But then there are the other parts. The other parts that perhaps are not so deep, but I have to deal with those other parts. So this type of philosophy helps in this way, certainly. You can't sit down. How are your knees? You can do it.
I want to make him sit.
Your knees aren't going to give you pain? How do we deal with the pains in the knees? You know, not my body, so much philosophy, but when your knee hurts, what do? How do you listen to philosophy when your knee hurts, when you're hungry, when you're tired, when your eyes I'm not my body. Again and again and again. What do? One thing we do is open the door so there's more fresh air. That could help also. Why not? We'll be brave, proactive. What do we do when our philosophical understanding does not reach, excuse me, our practical understanding doesn't reach our philosophical understanding. What do we do? I think one thing is we should try to elevate our practical understanding so it's on par with our philosophical understanding. Clearly we should do that. We shouldn't bring our philosophical understanding down to our practical understanding. We shouldn't do that, because the Shastra is there to guide us, to teach us, to give us the lamp, to give us knowledge to what the ideal is. We may not be able to act on the ideal level, but we shouldn't try to change the ideal. We should know what the ideal is, and life is meant for striving for the ideal, which we won't be able to reach perhaps, but we should adjust our life so that if we know what gives us the proper direction to aim for. So that's one point. Another point, what happens when we see that our practical application is not on the ideal level? So that's one thing we shouldn't do and what we should do. Another thing is we can become depressed about it, or we can give up, this is too hard. But there are other alternative mentalities to that, and the recommended one is
to don't care all your activities, Krishna.
Yes, dear. But what is before prayer and before dovetailing, when we see that the ideal is like that, but my consciousness is like that? Raise your hand and I'll call. Okay, we've had two suggestions. One is dovetail everything. Second is
pray.
Another one? What you
should?
Yeah, I'm looking for one is like the root one. Yeah, but before you start making the best use of a bad bargain, what should you do? Yes, become. That's, and the next word? Yes! Become humble. Oh, this is what I'm supposed to be. I'm not what I should be. And what's the opposite of humility? Pride. So I shouldn't be proud. I should be humble. And based on humility, all the other things that were recommended are then we should make the best use of a bad bargain. We should pray. But unless we get the humility in place, the rest won't work. So humility is the essential Vaishnava teaching in one sense. It's the miraculous medicine. But it's so easy to imitate and so hard to actually feel humble. The imitative humility is the one where we think, we look around and say, you know, we learn how to put on the externals of humility, and then we say, I'm probably the most humble person around. Yes, I think it's actually true. No one's as humble as I am. But what's the, and then the other side, the other way to do it, to fake humility, is to what I call neurotic, self-indulgent thinking, which just means all day long your mind goes round and round about how bad you are. And oh, I'm so bad, and I'm so bad, and I do this wrong, and I do this wrong. This is not humility. This is just a bluff of humility, just like the other one is a bluff of humility. Because who are you thinking about all the time? Yourself. The mind, and just all the time thinking, that's not humble. That's just thinking about yourself. The same thing as pride. It's the same when you look in the mirror all the time, all day long, thinking about how beautiful you look, and the other way is how bad you look. And it's all the same thing. Just looking in the mirror all day long. So what does it mean to be humble, in fact? Huh?
Do not be anxious in the area of mortification.
Yes, but something more basic. And this is where Krishna consciousness actually begins. With humility, and then that brings us to take shelter of Krishna, Saranagati. So a humble person who is truly humble takes shelter of Krishna, seeing his own inability, his own incapacity. He takes shelter of Krishna and he knows how to chant. That such a person knows how to chant the holy name properly, Kirtaniya Sadhari. He knows, he's humble, he knows how to be tolerant. He knows how to give respect to others. And he knows how to not demand respect from others. He is humble and he's tolerant because he knows this. But he's taking shelter of Krishna, so therefore he's thinking about Krishna. But yet we can learn from a material body, and we should learn how to break and cut the foolish material attachments that we have, even though we may not be on the perfect level. We should understand what is ideal, and we should be humble. And we take shelter of Krishna, and also, because we are humble and not proud, and not always thinking about how bad we are, because those two extremes don't let us do the other thing. And the other thing is, we've mentioned one element of it, is to surrender and take shelter of Krishna. And then when one takes shelter of Krishna, what does one do? Yeah, who said it?
You serve.
Because the opposite of servant consciousness is master consciousness. And in master consciousness, who's the center? I'm in the center. And servant consciousness, the master is in the center. And who is the master? The one who we have surrendered to. Guru, Vaishnavas, and Balavas, Sisipolatai, Janahat Balavas, Sivajas, Prabhupada. And not only that, everyone else. Because we're not the master of anyone. Because I know how far I am from the ideal. So it's quite a science in a sense. Easy to understand, difficult to do because of the presence of false ego. False ego, it just has a way of coming up again and again and again. We try to make it go away, false ego. But it comes back because it's the very root of our material existence. It's our point of Krishna Bhule Se Jiva Nadir Bhagi Mukh. We've turned our back on Krishna. We've turned our back on our actual ego, our real identity and relationship with Krishna. Hare Krishna, how are you? We've turned our back on our actual ego means identity, and we've turned our back on our identity in relationship with Krishna as Krishna's servant. And we've adopted a different identity, a false identity, a false sense of self. So this turning to Krishna from Bhaimu to Samu, turning our face to Krishna, is the process of bhakti. See that Jiva Goswami describes this. But this is what bhakti is accomplishing, the process of sadhan bhakti. But that bhakti, to get the result, and what's the result of bhakti? It's prema. It's love for Krishna. That's the result, and the process of bhakti that brings that result is called kevala bhakti, or haitiki bhakti, or pure devotional service. That it should be practiced with anya vilasita sunyam, not to gain anything material, subtly or grossly. Those are called upasakagan, or weeds that surround our devotional people. And we water our devotional kripa, our bhakti lata, naturally the weeds will also take the water. And the anerbona false ego. So it takes a lot of this kind of hearing. A lot of hearing about what the process is, and it takes a lot of introspection to know, to ask ourselves, well, what is it that I actually desire? What do I actually want? What do I want to cultivate? What kind of desires do I want to cultivate? And then one needs to know the process. And one has to have faith. Not in me, but in the Bhagavatam, in Srila Prabhupada, in the deities. That if I follow the process, the line of Srila Rupa Goswami, that I'll, if I follow it purely, I'll actually get the result of Prema Bhakti. And how does one get that faith? One hears about the great devotees of the past and the great devotees of the present. These devotees, such as Raghunath Das Goswami, or our so close to us in the time of Srila Prabhupada, how could he have done what he did? How could he have done what he did? If you haven't read Prabhupada's Lilamrita, have you read it? A little bit? Have you read it? All? Have you read it? That would be a good book for you to read. It's quite an amazing story about an elderly man at 70 years old. At 70, how old is our Mahatmaji?
72.
72, just around that age, a little bit younger. He leaves India with no paisa.
14 rupees.
No, well, that's nothing. Nothing. Not knowing anyone. As he said, when he got off the boat in New York, that he didn't know whether to go left or right. Not knowing anyone. Completely different culture. And yet, with this intense determination to spread, to follow the orders of his Guru Maharaj, he didn't feel alone. He didn't feel alone, he didn't feel unprotected even. And the result was incredible. Incredible. And we are all the result of that. Of Prabhupada's incredible endeavor. Whatever, we are all living by the remnants of his prasadam. It's sustaining us, in fact. So we hear about Prabhupada and how. And it's not that it all just was, you know, perfectly smooth, and you know, it was as soon as he came, then you know, thousands of people came and fell, pure people fell at his lotus feet, and then just preached, and everything was wonderful. He struggled from the beginning to the end, actually, from the first day onward. He had to struggle because the people who came didn't know anything. Didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness. When I had in my, by the time I went to the university, I had never even met a vegetarian in my whole life. I mean, no one ever even considered these things. And what he has done. Quite amazing by the grace of the, and it was done with full surrender and dependence, and he had some very, very powerful things that he was giving. The holy names, the Bhagavatam, association of devotees, gradually introduced deity worship, etc., and tried to bring the devotees. Raise your hand if you've been to Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. To just make, to build that one temple. Now we take it for granted, it's so crowded. To build that one temple, or the Mayapur temple, or the Mumbai temple, was such a struggle for Prabhupada and the devotees. It was incredible, incredible. To go to India and to build these things, and just one person, incredible. And he had the assistance of people who didn't know anything about how to live in India. And then, in those days, India was so how to say it politely, technologically backward. I mean, I remember when I first lived in Vrindavan, you couldn't even telephone Mathura. What to speak of Delhi? What to speak of an overseas phone call? You couldn't even, and if you wanted to go to Mathura from Vrindavan, it was all day long it would take you to get there because we didn't have, no one had any cars and things like that. And there was only one kind of car in India, and that was the Ambassador, which is probably the safest car still in India, built like a tank. Not so styly, but and if it breaks down, you can fix it with some chewing gum and some wire or something. So what a Prabhupada was so empowered in that way. Otherwise impossible. And then we hear about Raghunath Das Goswami. We hear what he gave up. His parents, his father and uncle were so wealthy. So wealthy, so wealthy. And they wanted to give it to him. You please take this. There are big zamindars in Bengal. You take this, you take this. Take it. And he learned how to say yes, 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 and then do exactly the opposite, just waiting for his time to leave. He's at the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. And then how did he live first in Jagannath Puri and then in Srivrindavan Dham? How did he live? He lived just by eating a little bit, living outside. He lived in ecstasy on the holy names in Krishna Katha. That was his nourishment. And he'd be crying and crying and crying, living in Radhakunda, crying and crying, very thin, living on the soul platform and his relationship with Srimati Radharani and Sri Krishna Chandra. And then people would say, oh, he's so thin and he's crying. He must be really hungry, and therefore he's crying. And then they'd go to him and say, you can go home, it's okay, they'll feed you home. You can go home then, if you're so hungry and crying. He'd say, no. Some people get their happiness by eating, and others by crying. So happy to go away. In the path of Rupa Goswami, also, he was practically, he and his elder brother Sanatana Goswami, were managing the kingdom of Nawab Hussain Shah. Very interesting history, actually. There was a point where, because Nawab Hussain Shah, if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, historical figure, he was a servant of Subhudi Roy. And then there was a sultanate who was ruling Bengal in those times on behalf of the Mughals in Delhi. And then they brought in slaves from a different Islamic part of the world, and the Nawab Hussain Shah was one of those slaves, and there was a slaves' rebellion, and they took over, and he was made the king. And Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and Anupam, they were managing. They were so brilliant. They were managing the whole kingdom. So much so that the king felt he couldn't rule without them. He was so dependent on them. And they gave it up. Tuchava is insignificant. To live as mendicants, as beggars. How is that possible? To live in ecstasy, detached from the material world, but living again on the sweetness of the holy names. And Rupa Goswami writing so many books to guide us so that we could taste the ecstasy that he was tasting. And Sanatana Goswami, same. Chief minister of Nalabhusangsara. Left everything. Got out of jail. The king wouldn't let him go. He allowed Rupa Goswami to go, but he wouldn't allow Sanatan to go because he was completely dependent on Sanatan Goswami, his prime minister. He jailed him. And Rupa Goswami sent him some gold, and he used that gold to get out of jail. And he disappeared from there. He quickly went on the back roads and saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who instructed him in Krishna consciousness. And he just wandered in Vrindavan, but he was so much, everyone in Vraja loved him so much, they would call him Barababa, because he was the senior most. And he would wander from one village to the next. At different times he lived in different ways. And everyone loved him so much, Sanatana Goswami. And when the people in one village would see him coming, they would say, oh, Barababa is coming. And they would all rush out. The whole village would rush out to see him. And they would walk with him into the village. They would sit him down, and he would say, and how are you? And he would ask them how their families were. And they just loved him so much. He didn't want anything. How is this? How is your farming going? And he just had so much love for him because his heart was so full. And he gave up this wealthy position, which is ultimately empty-heartedness. The heart can never be full by materialistic means. It will forever remain empty and unsatisfied. And then they would talk to him all night long in the village. He would solve any kind of problems that were there amongst the inhabitants of the village. And they would say, when the sun would start coming up, they would say, oh Baba, we know you only stay in a place one night, but please, this time, maybe we'll spend some more time. And he'd say, no, I have to move on. And they say, oh, Baba, come back soon, please. Then they would accompany them to the edge of the village, and then the people from the next village would say, oh, Baba Baba is coming! And they would all rush out in this way. That was sometime. So these great souls, they lived and they didn't have anything on the material level, and yet they were so fully satisfied. Why? Because their consciousness was on above, not on the mirrors above, or the light above, or the fan above, but their consciousness was on Radha and Krishna and Radha Krishna's pastimes. Their consciousness was full. He Radhi Brajadi Vikhi Chalalite. They were always looking. Their consciousness was in its search feature, was fully activated. They were always searching for Krishna. This is the proper consciousness. To find this, for Krishna to be there, because even in the consistent desire to search for Krishna, to be with Krishna, will fill our consciousness with Krishna. Krishna will be there. If we can just increase that desire, these kind of slokas and verses and instruction are meant to convince us that we shouldn't put our energy into increasing our bodily needs. We should live as simply as we can, but not as simply as we can so we can save as much money as we can, but simply as we can so that we don't increase our sense of security and wealth being in the material world, which is based on the material body. Why? Because it is doomed. And the most amazing thing, the most wonderful thing is we all know this. But yet, the power of Maya is so strong that it's so difficult to have a strong enough spiritual desire, in fact, that will keep us from increasing our material. We still look to the material realm for our security. How foolish is that? How foolish is that? very Buddhist. How can we find security, safety? How can we find security on the material level where everything must be crushed into powder? Rather, we find distress. We should move forward spiritually. We should move forward spiritually. That is the message. We should move forward spiritually by following the process that Srila Prabhupada has given us, the books, deities, the holy names, the service, the preaching. We should move forward, you know, at our own pace, but we should not wait too long. We should not wait too long. Why shouldn't we wait too long?
Because death can come anytime. Because death can come anytime.
At any time, but yes. Why else? You have your finger raised. Now you have to speak. Why else? Why shouldn't we wait too long? Certainly death is coming, very ultimate. But also, if we don't increase our spiritual desires, it's sure that our material desires, we can't remain in neutral. Our material desires, it will push us, it will force us. So, and when we see our inconsistencies, we become humble and prayerfully chant Krishna's names. Understand that we're in somewhat a precarious position. In the material world, we're in a precarious position, by definition. So we should seek shelter. The shelter truly is on the eternal realm, and chant Hare Krishna. And in the midst of all this, who do you want to know? And in the midst of all this, amazing as it sounds, in the midst of all this, we could actually be deeply happy if we're in touch with the eternal realm, with the deities, with the holy names, with Prabhupada, with our great acharyas continuously. Okay, let's stop here, and it's so late, so no time for questions. But thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Gaurachari ki jai, Shri Shri Radhavallabh ki jai, Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra ki jai, Shri Nitai Gaur Primana ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki
jai.
You say that again, and I can't do that either. Please stop. Because what happens if I believe you? Then I'm in so deep trouble.